A long time ago, in a faraway land, a prophecy was given to a great king that his kingdom was about to experience abundance beyond belief. But after that time of great prosperity would come the most severe economic depression his country had ever known. A terrible drought, followed by extreme famine, leading to the starvation and death of most in his kingdom. The prophecy was given as a warning. The intent was that the king would respond by making the most of the season of abundance, storing up food that would be desperately needed during the dark season to follow. How would the king respond? With wisdom or foolishness? You and I are facing a situation not so different from the king. Most of us are living in a season of prosperity right now, but a season of famine is coming. The prophecy has been given. The clock is ticking. The choice is ours to heed the prophecy or ignore it. What is the prophecy? There's a prophecy given about you that we must heed. Where is the prophecy found? It's in two places in the Bible, probably more than that actually, but it's in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. It's in Isaiah and 1 Peter. I'd like to share the prophecy with you, and we'll move from there. Isaiah 40, 6 through 8. All people are like grass, and all their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall because the breath of the Lord blows on them. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God stands forever. 1 Peter, it's basically the same. All people are like grass. All their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of the Lord endures forever. What is this prophecy saying? Put it bluntly, you're going to die. That's the prophecy. How do we know this is about us? All people. This was written for them. It's written for them in the Old Testament, New Testament. It's for us today. This is truth. Everyone is going to die. Hebrews 9:27, it's appointed to man once to die, after that to face the judgment. This is going to happen. We are all like grass. That's the prophecy. 100 years from today, every single person in this room will have faced the ultimate equalizer, unless Jesus returns before then. Everybody dies. That's an encouraging prophecy for you this morning. But before that happens, if we follow the normal progression, we get old. And as we get older, we get weaker. We're not able to do as much. We're not as valuable to an employer. Most of us will retire by choice or by necessity. And you're going to have to figure out how to pay the bills without a paycheck. Today we're talking about preparing for that. Are you preparing for that day? The prophecy has been spoken. You will get to that point. If your family earns a paycheck, you are in the season of abundance right now. You are in the season of prosperity. It doesn't matter how big the paycheck is. You are in the prosperity time. So are you preparing for the famine that's coming? Because the famine will reach us all. Now, some of us are retired and no longer receive a paycheck, so you're in the famine now. Hopefully, it's going all right for you. Some of you are in that famine time. Have you prepared? Hopefully, you've been wise and prepared. Most of you have. You're not dying, thankfully. I sent out an email to those who are retired in this church family just asking, what would you tell those of us who are not retired yet? I just sent it out to everybody who had email who is currently retired and got a few interesting responses. Just share a couple of them with you. First one I got, some of the people who responded are not here today, so that's okay. I'm not going to tell you who they are. Retirement comes sooner than you realize. I retired because my department relocated to Philadelphia and I chose not to travel every day. I regret doing that and would suggest working as long as you can, not only for monetary reasons, but for having something to look forward to and people to be with every day. Second person said this, focus on the right things. For me, that's my family. Anytime the world tips upside down, i.e. layoffs, stock losses, etc., I ask myself a few questions. Is my wife healthy? Are my kids healthy? Are my grandkids healthy? Can I still provide a roof over their head? Can I feed them? Am I healthy so I can continue to provide for them? And the answers to these questions are usually good, and everything else is a non-issue. The third person said this: even with retirement, I don't have enough hours in the day to do the things I want to do. I could use more time if you could help me out with that. Even in retirement, people are busy. This is the third week of our four-part series talking about money, from financial stress to financial peace. These four principles from the book of Proverbs. Just a little bit of review. Who remembers principle number one? One word. I heard it. Relax. That's the first principle. Relax. Money's not as important as you think. It is just a tool, not a goal. Principle number two. Who remembers that one? You remember the tape across the board? Use caution. Avoid debt if you possibly can, because the borrower is servant to the lender. This week, principle number three, plan ahead. Plan ahead. The future is coming at you faster than you think, right? The future is coming at you faster than you think. Save something for tomorrow. We have to do that. We have to start now. If you want to get somewhere you've never been before, what do? You want to get to Idaho. What do? What's that? Save your money. It's going to cost money, right? It's going to cost money to get there. What else you got to do? Plan. You got to plan this trip. You got to schedule the time off. You map out a path. You might want to find out how to get there, right? Pray about it. Why are you going to Idaho? There might be some good things to do in Idaho, right, John? Yeah, you might ask somebody who's been there. You might consult Google to see how long is this going to take? How much gas am I going to need? You're going to have to plan. Some way or another, you have to sort out the directions. You have to figure that out. Or if you just drive, you're not going to get there. We are all on a journey. Like it or not, you're alive, you're on this journey. And we are cruising through life, and every day, you're another day older, you're another day closer to the last. Every day. And none of us has done this before. You get one shot at this. Contrary to most video games, you get one life. One. And as we go, we are all picking up some wisdom along the way we can share with each other, but there's only one who's not restricted to the game board of life. He's outside of this thing, and he wrote the directions. So I think it's good to learn from each other, but it's essential that we consult the one who wrote the directions and said, This is how you should go. We've been going through this series, and we're kind of all over the Bible, mostly in Proverbs, but in some other places. I just kind of did a search all over Scripture. What does God say about finances and wisdom? And I just tried to cull the most significant passages for these 4 weeks. So that's why we're kind of all over. That's not my usual style, but every so often I can do that. I hope that's okay with you. But today we're highlighting five scriptures that are just kind of taking us through this journey towards the end, which hopefully is going to be a good place. When you get to that place of retirement, you're going to be prepared, and you're going to be okay. You're going to be in a strong place. If we follow God's wisdom, we are most likely going to end up there. So there's a path we're on, and there are ways that we can stay on the path. There are ways that we can fall off the path. And so these five scriptures hopefully will be guideposts for us as we head through. Because what God wants for us, he wants us to run through the finish line in victory, not defeat. He wants us to have victory. He has good stuff for us. So he gives us directions, he gives us wisdom, and we follow his wisdom, we thrive, we ignore it, and we wither. So you might find some ways that maybe you've not even realized God's wisdom and are withering and didn't realize it, didn't realize why. So maybe there's going to be a light that goes on today. Maybe there's going to be, as we go through, you're going to be like, okay, this is the one I need to work on right here. Because there's going to be a word connected to each one of these as we go through. So I hope it ends up being helpful for you. But the big thing is plan ahead. Plan ahead. If you don't, it's not going to go well. All right, so we're going to start at the beginning. You start at start. And if you follow this order, there's a logical order to this, even though it's not like Genesis to Revelation. There's a logical order, and if you follow this path, you're going to be less likely to hit that spot that says go back three spaces. Have you ever been in a life situation where you went back three spaces? Yeah, that happens. We're looking specifically about how we handle our money. That's the main focus for today. But these passages, there's a couple from the New Testament and three from Proverbs. So let's start 1 Timothy chapter 6. Open your Bible if you've got it. You can jump through with me. We'll be going from one to the next, but you can see where we're going. So if you like to look ahead and be like, stick your finger in that spot when we get to Luke 14, you're ready. That's fine. Do what you want. But 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 10. What does he have to share with us here? Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Godliness with contentment is great gain. There's a lot of warnings in these verses. Please don't pursue wealth. It's not going to go well for you. People who do that, they fall into temptations, traps, many foolish and harmful desires, plunging men into ruin and destruction. Stay away from that desire to get rich. Focus on what's real, what's really important. Godliness with contentment is great gain. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for it, wander from the faith, pierce themselves with many griefs. You hear the warnings. You hear the warnings. Listen to the warnings. Godliness with contentment is great gain. The first word here, the starting point, is contentment. Contentment is the place where we start. And that's going all the way back to the beginning. Relax. It's not as important as you think. We need to make sure that's where our heart starts. He who has contentment has far more than he who has it all yet lacks contentment. You can have everything. If you're not content, you're worse off than the guy who has basically nothing with contentment. So why are we striving for all that stuff? Let's strive for contentment. We can be at peace. We can be at rest. In this scripture, he said, we'll be content with food and clothing. You notice what's not there? It doesn't even say shelter. Food and clothing. If I were writing that, I might add shelter. Family that loves you. Let's strip it down to the basics, the essentials. Contentment. The pitfall, here's where we get off the track. There's kind of a warning connected to each of these verses. The pitfall is greed. You're gonna get off the road if you allow greed to come into your life and have its way. We got to fight against that. Let's mosey on up to Luke 14. Luke 14, verses 28 to 30. Jesus is speaking here, and he says this: suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build and was not able to finish. You want to build something? You got a project? You better look at what it's going to take to get there. What are you going to need to get this project done? Jesus is talking specifically, this is the cost of being a disciple. You want to follow after me? Here's what it's going to cost you. And Jesus didn't hold back about that. It's going to cost you everything. You want to be my follower? I'm going to ask for everything. You're going to suffer. You're going to be in lack. How many times did Paul go without food? Shelter, for sure. But Jesus, as he calls his disciples, you're going to suffer. but you're going to be glad you did. You're going to be glad you chose to follow me. So he uses that illustration. You've got to count the cost. I don't want people who are just looking for a free ride, looking for another meal, looking for me to just give you stuff. It costs a lot to follow me, but it is certainly worth it. It is certainly worth it. So this example, this example, you're building a tower, count the cost. That applies to a lot of different situations. You want to start a family? Count the cost. You're going to go to college? Count the cost. You want to buy a car? Count the cost. You want to get married? Count the cost. Think about what it's going to take. What is it going to take to get there? And if you want to get to the end of life and be ready when it's time to retire, think about what it's going to take to get there. So we're talking about retirement a little bit, even though many of us are a long way from there. And I'm using Dave Ramsey's book, Total Money Makeover. I got some more clips I'm going to read from this. But he has a few things to say about just some motivation to prepare for retirement and what it is and really what it isn't. So just a paragraph here. What retirement isn't. Investing for retirement in the context of a total money makeover doesn't necessarily mean investing to quit your job. If you hate your career path, change it. You should do something with your life that lights your fire and lets you use your gifts. Retirement in America has come to mean save enough money so I can quit the job I hate. That's a bad plan. Harold Fisher was 100 years old. How old was he? 100. He worked 5 days a week at the architectural firm he founded. Mr. Fisher didn't work because he needed money, not by a long shot. He worked because he found joy in what he did. He was a designer of churches. His favorite saying was, "People who retire early, die early." "If I retired, what would I do?" he asked. Harold Fisher was financially secure and able to do what he wanted, and that defines retirement the total money makeover way. He was able to do what he wanted. Retirement means that work is an option. You're not earning a paycheck. That doesn't mean not doing anything. So he warns, don't wait till you're 65 to do what you love. That said, the money part does matter. You want to reach your golden years with financial dignity. That'll happen only with a plan. According to a study by the Employee Benefit Research Institute, 70% of Americans say they are not where they need to be with retirement savings, and more than 40% have never even tried to calculate how much money they need to save in order to retire with dignity. How many of you have done the math to figure out how much you'll need to retire with dignity? I saw one hand. Apparently, it's more than 70% here. I haven't done the calculations. He's got a few calculations for us in here I'll share with you that can get your mind rolling. But here's another warning from the USA Today. USA Today reports that out of 100 people age 65, 97 of them can't write a check for $600. 54 are still working, and 3 are financially secure. Out of 100 people, 65, 3 are financially secure. Let's take that as a warning. I want to be one of those 3. I think you want to be one of those 3. So the pitfall here, take me off the track, no plan. I've got no plan. And what's the word? I forgot to give you the word. Count the cost, see what it's going to take. The word is responsibility. Sorry. I don't know if you can read that, but it's responsibility. Responsibility. We've got to consider what it's going to take to get there. We have to think through the details. So, move up to Proverbs. Now we'll be in Proverbs for a little bit. Proverbs chapter 13. It's going to kind of give us a little bit of help in what to do with our responsibility. We understand, okay, we need to make a plan. We need to think this through. Proverbs 13:11 says this: "Dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. Now, I think we all can grasp the idea that dishonest money is not the way to, I'm not going to prepare for my retirement by cheating someone else in dishonest money. The focus we want to have here is this little by little idea. He who gathers money little by little makes it grow. That's a piece of wisdom for us. And that comes with having a plan. So this is kind of the middle and the main thought, plan. You've got to have a plan. Little by little is how you're going to get there. You're not going to gather little by little without a plan to do it. A budget is the tool that you need to carry out that plan. That's what you do. You put it together. You put together a budget and plan for, I'm going to save some money. I'm going to put this away, and I'm going to make that happen. So the pitfall to avoid is no follow-through. A plan has to have some follow-through. I found some interesting stats online. This was a Gallup poll in 2013 discovered that only 1 in 3 Americans prepare a detailed household budget. 1 in 3 have a planned budget. Even fewer of those include a long-term financial plan with investment goals. 1 in 3 actually have a plan. Luke 14, Proverbs 13 that we've already been in, they've given us some guidance, some warnings. We need to have a plan. We need to make this a priority and put this together. So think about your own situation, your own finances, where you're at. Do you have a plan? And is your plan sufficient? If you're going to apply this, if you're going to take this home, you're going to have to look at your situation and say, where am I? Am I thinking this through in a healthy way? Because those people that 2 in 3, their money just kind of disappears into this black hole. You get to the end of the month, there's no money left. Another month has gone by, and I haven't been able to put anything away for the future. How many people are in that situation? Boy, I sure hope things get better. Well, they won't. Not without a plan. We've got to do this little by little. Now, the plan used to be, the government several decades ago came up with this great idea, Social Security, right? We will force people to put away their money. We will force them to do it. We will take it from them. We'll hold it for them. And when they get old enough, we'll give it back. And that's worked for a while. They just didn't account for certain things, like the baby boom and different things like that, and people who might decide to borrow from Social Security. And I don't know all the details of how that's happening. But from what I understand, most people don't have a lot of confidence in Social Security anymore. And so I want to just tell you, make sure Social Security is not your plan. And I want to just read one little thing from Total Money Makeover. Ramsey is, he tends to just say it how he thinks it. And he did a little survey that I found kind of interesting. He just warns, do not use your potential Social Security benefits in your calculations for retirement. Don't consider it. I don't count on an inept government for my dignity at retirement, and you shouldn't either. He says it how it is. This is how he feels. A recent survey said more people under age 30 believe in flying saucers than believe they'll receive a dime from social insecurity. I tend to agree. I'm not taking a political position, although I'm not above it, but the mathematics of that system spell doom. I'm not trying to encourage you to believe in flying saucers. I'm trying to encourage you away from counting on Social Security. Maybe there will be something in the future, but do not count on it. We need to have a plan that does not include that. Some of you may have a different plan. My plan is to work until I die, right? Maybe that's your plan, and that's okay. I got no problem with that. I believe we should keep on working until we're dead. If you want to keep working for a paycheck, that's fine. However, we have to understand you may not have that option. You can plan to do that, but you may not have that option. Your body may shut down before you're dead and you're not able to work. So we need to have a backup, even if you want to work till you die. That's okay. But I want to just give you a little bit more from Dave Ramsey. And here's why. Some of, maybe you're getting tired of Dave Ramsey. I kind of like his stuff. He gives you numbers. He gives you something to hold on to, something to think about. The reason I'm using Ramsey is because Dave Ramsey takes these scriptural ideas, staying away from greed, being responsible, making a plan. He takes these ideas, gather money little by little, and he brings it down to here's what that means. And here are some tools and how you can do it. So that's why we're using this. He's taken scripture and brought it down to a really practical place for us. So he's crunched some numbers and has some motivation. This is motivating for me. Maybe it will be for you, maybe not. But one of the tools that he likes is a Roth IRA. We're not going to talk a long time about this, but just listen to this. The Roth IRA will allow you to invest up to $5,000 a year, might be more than that now, per person. There are some limitations as to income and situation, but most people can invest in a Roth IRA. The Roth grows tax-free. If you invest $3,000 a year from age 35 to 65, how many years is that? 30 years, $3,000 a year, and your mutual funds average 12%. That sounds high, but there are several funds that their market average over 80 years is 12%. If you do that, at the end of 30 years, you will have $873,000 tax-free at age 65. How much money did you put in? $3,000? More than 3,000. You did it 30 times. So you put 90,000 in and you have 873,000 when you pull out, when you're retired. That is 780,000 interest. That's making your money work for you. It's good to have a plan and start early. If you do that for 10 years, it'll be anywhere near that. Pay no taxes on that. So he says Roth IRA is a very important tool in virtually anyone's total money makeover. Think about that. Think about that. That's motivating to me. How about you? I want to do that. I want to see that. There's something else here. Yeah, he had another example. Now he has an idea of how much you need to invest, a percentage of your income, in order to be ready. And what percentage would you think you need to save in order to be ready at retirement? Let me throw out a number. 30%. Can anybody invest 30% of your income for retirement? That's a high number. 5% if you start early enough. What did the government say for Social Security? How much is that? Anybody know? It's just over 15. Just over 15. You have to pay like 8%, 7 point something, and then the employer matches. 15%, roughly. He has an example. He says 15% is the number. They got that number right. You put away 15%, you'll be ready. So dream with me for a moment, he says. Dream that a 27-year-old couple with average to below average income commit to this total money makeover, which means their debt is paid off except for the mortgage. They have an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months. They've got that on hand. So debt is cleared. There's money available to do this. So they invest 15% of their income in four types of growth stock mutual funds with 5 to 10 year track records. The average household income in America is right around $50,000 per year, according to the Census Bureau. So we're talking about Joe and Susie average. They invest $7,500 every year. That's 15%. How much is that per month? $625. That's a lot of money, right? $620. So these people making $50,000 put $625 a month away. Now, if you make that much money, have no payments except the house mortgage, and live on a budget, he suggests you can do that. You can do that. So follow his path here. Joe and Susie invest $625 a month with no match from the employer into Roth IRAs from age 30 to age 70. So that's 40 years. They will have $7,588,545 tax-free. Almost 8 $1 million. He says, well, what if I'm half wrong? I'd take that. What if you end up with only $4 million? What if I'm 6 times wrong? That sure beats the 97 out of 165-year-olds who can't write a check for $600. Dream about that. We need to have a plan. It may not be $625 for you. You may not need that. Maybe more. I look at that number and I think, wow, that's a high number. That's a high number. But if you can clear your debt, if you can get yourself in a situation, that is doable. That can be done. And maybe you don't need that much. You do the calculations and figure you don't need $8 million when you retire. But he points out, this is not a normal situation, because this is a family that made $50,000 a year and never got a raise over 40 years. Right? They did the same amount, $625, the entire time. So that's not really realistic. Most people are going to make more than that. All right, next proverb. Number 4, Proverbs 21:20. We're almost through here. I'm going to read a proverb and then show a video. And I want you to figure out what is the commonality between the proverb and the video. Proverbs 21:20. In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all that he has. I got a 2-minute clip. I want you to figure out, what do these things have in common? You need to start at one minute. I'm not showing you the whole thing. You may want to go back and watch this. This is Danny McCaskill, who I just discovered this week. He amazes me. Danny and I are riding buddies. I was taking the video, that's why I wasn't. Is anybody impressed by that? I love to ride. I saw that. Unbelievable. Now, how does that video clip and this verse connect? Is there anything specific that impresses you about what Danny is able to do? Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty careful about the navigation. Although it seems like he can go over just about anything, so it almost doesn't matter. Yep. I think the thing that I was impressed with most two things. One is balance. He's got to have amazing balance. And self-control. Anybody impressed by his self-control? Hopping over those ginormous boulders and across. The end of that video, he cruises right up to a fence, barbed wire fence, and he flips over it and lands and keeps on going. And the fence is like this high. It's amazing what he can do. Self-control. Self-control. The house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil. This person has, the wise person has saved up and has a store of food and oil. But the foolish man devours all he has. The foolish man does not exercise self-control and just consumes it. At the end of the month, there's nothing left. If I want to stay on this path and end up in a good place, you and I are going to have an incredible amount of self-control. We're going to have to say no to things. You want to put $625 a month away? You're going to have to say no to some stuff. Your decision-making might have to change. Why I do what I do, what I buy, what I don't buy. It might change the car you buy. It might help you decide what house you're going to live in. When you're going to make those decisions and how you're going to go in that direction. This is hard, and this takes a lot of self-control. This Danny is you saw the video, right? There are lots of mistakes, lots of accidents, and thousands of hours that he puts into this. He is very discipline. This isn't just he woke up one day and, woo, I can do anything on a bike. But he can do anything on a bike. Some of his other videos are pretty incredible too. But he's constantly working at it. He gets up early. He's got a coach. He's got somebody working with him, and he loves doing it. We're going to have self-control to get to the end and be at a good place, at a healthy place. When you're looking for a house, you're not going to buy a house that's, what is the most I can afford? By the way, a bank is going to tell you can afford a lot more than you really can. But if you don't have a plan, if you don't have this laid out, you're not going to know what you can afford. So it's up to us. It's not up to the banker. It's not up to the credit card dealer to tell us what we can afford. Got to have a plan. Those of us who have a different set of glasses on and we're told, hey, you can afford this. We're all excited. We jump into it and we've just signed up for financial bondage for the rest of our lives. This is going to affect some of the big decisions you make in your life. It can. It should. It should. Because I don't want to sign up for financial bondage the rest of my life. And if you can't afford to save, if you've bought all these things and you can't afford to save anything, something needs to change. So your situation might need a tweak. Your situation might be perfectly fine. Your situation might need a total bailout. Like, I need to sell this and sell that. And I don't know what your situation is. But if it's going to mean you're ending in a place where you're financially secure at the end, it might be worth an extreme decision. It could be worth moving. It could be, that's extreme. I'm not saying everybody here, you better move out of your house and move into a little cottage. We'll all move into the same cottage together. I'm not suggesting that. But I would consider it an option if my situation requires extreme measures. Your decisions today are going to affect the quality of your life tomorrow, your financial freedom tomorrow. So self-control in our spending is a big deal. So we're going through this track. You see how it starts with contentment? That's really important. That's going to really help us as we go through. Then we take responsibility. I'm going to make a plan. We make the plan. We follow through with the plan. And then we can end at Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. A good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. So again, we're focusing on the positive side. We're not focusing on the negative here. Proverbs often have, here's the good, here's the bad. I want to leave an inheritance for my children's children. I want to have something at the end. I don't want to be completely broke. I want to finish strong. So let's think just for a second. If you don't change anything in your current situation, your current plan, the way things are going now, are you going to end at the finish in a healthy place? Let's just say you walk out of here, good sermon, Pastor Nate, and nothing changes. Are you going to end here? That's what decides if you need to do something about this topic or not. And you might need to think about which one of these really needs work. Is it the self-control? Is that my issue? I buy things I shouldn't. Or is it contentment? I'm really not there. Or is it the plan? Like, which one of those things? You probably don't need to beat yourself up for all of them, but you might need to focus on one of those things if you want to end up over there. Now, you might be feeling, if you're a spiritual person, you might be feeling this is a little bit lacking, because retirement is not the end, right? So most of our emphasis is about some of this really practical stuff, which does matter. I want my final days to be enjoyable. I don't want to be in this financial nightmare when I get here. But this is bigger than that. This is bigger than that. We're only at step three of these four principles. And so if I can stay on this path and end here with financial dignity, as Dave Ramsey puts it, that is going to set me up for the final principle, which has to do with, what am I going to do with my financial freedom? What am I going to do in this place? And somewhat all along the way, what am I going to do with that? So, I'm not going to tell you what that is, but this is gearing us up for something bigger, something more than just having enough money to do what I want, to travel, to have enough and not have to worry, not have to work till I die. What are you going to do with that freedom when you have it? So, whatever happened to that king who received the prophecy? What happened to that guy? He followed the path of wisdom. He listened to the warning. He appointed a young man with exceptional wisdom to develop a plan so they could survive this economic crisis. They stored up massive amounts of food. They decided we need to tax the people 20% for the next 7 years. They have to give 20% of all their stuff. They acquired so much food. When the famine came and everything died, they still had plenty. First year went by, they still had plenty. Second year went by, lots and lots. Third year, fourth year, fifth year, sixth year, 7 years of complete horrible famine. And they had enough. They practiced wisdom. They had a plan. They followed it through. They even had enough to help the nations around them. The story is true. The young man's name, who developed this plan? Joseph. Lord, I pray that you will fill us with wisdom. Not wisdom to use for our own selfish means, but that we'd be wise with the money you've given us, that we can not find ourselves in a financial hole, in an emergency, but that we can have a plan so that we can move forward and end at a place where we're free. Free to be all that you've called us to be. So, Father, I pray for those of us here who need to make some changes if we're going to stay on the path. God, I pray for courage and wisdom, that they'll take the necessary steps, that they'll take the initiative to do that, because the future is just flying towards us. It's hard for me to think that way, but I know it's true. So help us to be wise. Help us to help each other. And just that the majority of us would be in a place where we are free and not a slave to someone else, whether it's money or a creditor, that we can be free. and be your servant completely. Please help us. Lord, you know we need help with self-control, with responsibility, with following through with the plan, and just with that bare essential of contentment. Work in our hearts, Father, in Jesus' name. Amen.